This is URN.
As we discussed on Thursday's Pulse, yesterday saw seats on 150 councils throughout the country contested in local elections. Overall, neither the Conservative nor Labour parties made substantial gains, but there were some small victories. With 131 of 150 councils declared, the Tories have managed to hold their total number of councils at 43, as though they lost Mole Valley, Plymouth, Richmond-upon-Thames and Trafford, they gained Barnet, Basildon, Peterborough and Redditch. Though Labour have lost Derby, Nuneaton and Redditch, they have gained a total of 57 councillors throughout the country, bringing their total number to 1,848 to the Conservatives' 1,249. Funnily enough, my council is one of those that the Conservatives won. Barnet, which big up ends, has been a Conservative safe seat the whole time since its foundation in the 70s. But in the election of 2017, MP Theresa Villiers' margin was reduced to only 371 votes. It's seen that this has changed hands, though, as the as now Conservatives have increased their seats from 31 to 38, taking one from the Lib Dems and five from Labour. This is largely attributable to the large Jewish community within the Barnet, becoming increasingly apathetic towards Corbyn's Labour Party. Barry Rawling, chair of Barnet's Labour Party, released a statement thanking the Jewish community in Barnet for votes, but noting that too many didn't, as they felt the Labour Party has failed to deal with anti-Semitism on a national level. Incremental change was also seen in a number of other councils, one of which Rebecca is going to tell us about. What can you tell us about Bradford?
So Bradford's been a Labour hold, actually, but it's had Labour for the past few years. However, they have kind of kept the same number of councillors. I think it's gone down a couple of times, but this time they've gained three, and Conservative have only gained one, compared to we've got the rest of the parties, Lib Dem, Independent, Green and UKIP, all losing one councillor there. Because I've been in the area, I'm not surprised that in Bradford in particular, Labour are holding it, because the area there is quite pro-Labour, but it is quite surprising to see the rise of three more MPs, because three more councillors, because I think particularly in my area there was quite a lot of frustration towards Labour government, and they said even though I had some interesting people, like, even though some of them wanted to, they did vote their Labour MP in the general election, they now didn't want to vote a Labour councillor because post-general election they realised that they didn't actually like the way Labour was going. So, quite a lot of confusion, I think, in the Bradford area, but still, Labour hold, same as things were before, but with a few more Labour councillors and just one more Conservative.
And I do think that's actually quite an interesting point there. So what we're seeing is this indefinite fall of UKIP, that they've
lost all of their seats.
They've literally,
they?
Yeah, yeah, like 140.
They lost councillor they had in Bradford. Yeah,
they have nothing left.
Yeah.
I think what's interesting is that it's not one common trend. So we're not just seeing Labour have a bump, we're also seeing the Conservative have a bump, and largely it's actually balanced out. But one place I think that doesn't actually have any Conservative councillors, or many, is Norwich.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, Norwich has always been typically quite a Labour hold and a Labour seat, and it always has been. That's just because the way in which people have voted, and that's kind of a difference to the constituency surrounding Norwich. So, for example, Great Yarmouth previously used to have a very kind of UKIP stronghold around the area, but obviously that has slipped now, and Great Yarmouth has therefore has an even more strengthened Conservative base, basically. And we've got a kind of similar picture more broadly in the east of England around the Norwich area. It's still quite a Conservative hold. So not only do we have Great Yarmouth, we have areas in Hertfordshire and Essex which have retained their Conservative hold predominantly. However, Labour have had seats which they have held on to in Cambridge and Ipswich, and again it's kind of a similar demographic to Norwich, where you have a certain demographic of people voting for Labour rather than the Conservatives, because generally in the east of England area, when you have a kind of urban area, you tend to get people voting for Labour more than you do in the rural areas for Conservative. More of an interesting one, though, is this swing from no overall control in Peterborough to Conservative, because this wasn't expected at all when the reverse has happened in the Huntingdonshire region, where we've seen a change from no overall control to a Conservative as well. So like with the national picture, it's kind of a mixed bag in and around Norwich, and I think Labour are expected to do considerably better in some other areas, but they haven't necessarily so I think we can kind of conclude it's a rather a kind of picture of the national scene, basically.
Yeah, and I think there's what's strange is there's it's all very neutral, so there mm-hmm. really hasn't mm-hmm. been much change. But where we have seen change as well as UKIP is the Green Party. So the five seats that were the five council seats that were gained in Norwich were taken directly from the Green Party.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was also in Bradford, in other places of the country like Brighton, there have been losses from the Greens to Labour, which is kind of unprecedented because Brighton Pavilion is the only constituency in the UK that actually has a Green MP. But kind of other than that, based on the fact it's quite neutral, would you guys say this is a relatively successful election?
I wouldn't necessarily say it's successful for either of the parties, particularly not Labour, because Labour were expected to do a lot better than they were predicted to have done. I mean, you've got kind of key seats in London, which Labour are kind of contesting, such as Westminster and Wandsford, which the Conservatives have held on to again. So I think as much as we thought Jeremy Corbyn was going to be kind of this invincible political figure in these elections, he's somewhat been kind of dented, I would argue. And I guess it's kind of a good thing for Theresa May in a sense, because she's kind of retained her stronghold, essentially.
I think what's coming out of these council elections is that it's quite surprising in like the kind of political world we find ourselves in today, where so many things are changing. You expect, therefore, council elections to reveal some surprising results. But I think, you know, I was reading a lot of the headlines and they were kind of like mixed bag, you know, unexpected but also expected. It's like people are trying to find something out of this election because the previous elections we've had have just been so weird.
Yeah.
Like, and also everybody, like you were saying about Labour, everybody expected, I think, Labour to do the massive rise that they did in the general election. They expected that, you know, to get loads more Labour councils, just like we have loads more Labour constituencies now compared to like previous elections. And so I think, yeah, especially when we consider how kind of politically turbulent this country is at the moment, and that we kind of change things. We know we've had referendum last year's general election with like Theresa May just calling that what looked like virtually out of nowhere, and so I think people expected more change than there has been.
Yeah, although the change that there has been in the smaller parties like Green and UKIP and all those seats, I think that it doesn't actually surprise me in hindsight, because the loss of UKIP seats has most of the parties, the Labour and Conservative, are addressing foreign policy and things that UKIP was typically addressing, and that was their main like frontal of their party and their argument. So I think a lot of the parties, other parties, are addressing that, or the Labour and Conservatives are.
Well, I do think that's it's kind of a given thing that would eventually happen to UKIP, because really they were
ostensibly like a one-trick pony
They started out as a pressure group. That's their only task was to try and ensure that Britain left the EU, and now we're leaving the EU, despite the fact that, you know, comments have been made by the current chairman, who we'll play a clip from later after he said something a little bit controversial. He's made a comment that, you know, Brexit's being betrayed, that because of, you know, slow progress, or because of this equivocation on the whole procedure of leaving the EU, it's being betrayed, and actually the public's being fooled. Whether that's true or not, for all intents and purposes, now that we have stated our intention to leave the EU, there are surely Eurosceptics within the Conservative Party and within Parliament that are now going to take the role of essentially what UKIP did. And I think
that's true.
I personally think that UKIP was always inevitable they'd fizzle out. But another point I want to make, and it's something related back to what you said, Rebecca, is that, you know, we saw this immense insurgence of Labour in the impromptu general election last year. And I think the difference between a general election and a local election, the reason we say this is because there wasn't as much shock change in this one where people expected it. It's the other way around. It's because, you know, a general election is looking at a massive constituency as a whole, but local elections reveal communities. So as I said, Barnet which includes Chipping Barnet, which is my constituency. It includes Finchley and Golders Green, which is, you know, it has a massive Jewish population. And I think it does expose the this kind of discontent amongst certain religious groups in much the same way that I'm sure, you know, an area of London that's centred highly around immigrants would be more likely to be ambivalent to the Conservative Party or a Eurosceptic candidate, as we've seen, as you know, most of London is actually red. Despite the immense, you know, the lack of immense change, even both party leaders have made comments that, well, Theresa May said they had a strong night, and I suppose once you've had a disastrous night like the general election, any night where you don't break down in tears is fairly strong. Likewise, Jeremy Corbyn basically believes that Labour have solidly built on the advances they made in the 2017 general election, and they're starting to deliver. Like I said, we have quite an interesting comment from the relatively new UKIP chairman, Paul Oker. His party did ostensibly die last night, as we said. He went on BBC Radio 4 this morning, and he had quite an interesting conversation. Well, I really can't describe it any better myself. Here's what he said.
No, it's not over at all. I mean, think of the Black Death in the Middle Ages. It comes along and it causes disruption, and then it goes dormant, and that's exactly what we're going to do. Our time isn't finished because Brexit is being betrayed. And
can I just clarify, as General Secretary of UKIP, you've just compared your party with the Black Death?
Absolutely. What's wrong with that?
Well, it's responsible for the deaths of many hundreds of thousands of people, might be one reason to hesitate about the metaphor.
It also led to economic growth and the Renaissance.
So that's pretty self-explanatory. Yeah. A bit controversial. I think, bar the fact that some people might be offended by that, it's also just quite a ludicrous comment to make. But hey, he's going down with a sinking ship. It's admirable, I suppose. We were talking before about, you know, what is the promise of this kind of neutral and to be expected election. So a number of news outlets I saw today were saying, well, the lack of, you know, in an age of very distinct political change, so, you know, in the last couple of years, we've left the EU or we're leaving the EU. The election of Trump, the general election last year, there's this kind of, we're now used to unexpected political change so much so that it's expected. So when we think we're going to have one thing, we're generally inclined to think the other. And actually, when we've finally tailored our minds to think, well, this is going to be the obvious change because it's not what we'd expect, it's not. And one of the major news outlets in Britain did comment this morning that it looks a bit like both party leaders are fizzling out a bit, because if neither of them are capable of instigating such grand change in a period of time where change is so common, where you know this distinct change is always required, then it's, you know, they're fizzling out. It's high time they resign and, you know, both parties start to rebuild themselves. What do you guys think about that?
I would agree, particularly with Labour. I would think that they didn't achieve anything near what they should have done, especially in London. They had so many key seats that they were amping up about regaining that hold, and it just kind of fell through. Mm-hmm. And I think Jeremy Corbyn has been painted in the media as this, like, saviour for the Labour Party, and I'm yet to see him deliver, personally.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that we, can relate this kind of, the councillors to the political leaders, because, like, obviously, naturally, you tell the voters, you know, vote for your constituency, vote for what you want. But I think we're actually finally seeing, politically, some of the goings on at Westminster reflecting throughout the country, because, like, normally you would get a lot more variation, and there might be, you know, a swing towards Conservatives, swing towards Labour because of what the kind of general opinion of the public wants. But I think with these council elections, we've seen what we're seeing in Parliament right now, which is a standstill, people unable to make their minds up, and people because the leadership kind of isn't strong enough. There isn't enough of a drive. You know, if Labour's going to be in the position it says it's going to be, then you know we should be having people voting in the council elections for Labour because they want that change in their local area. If Conservative, you know, Theresa May says she's going to be as strong as she says she's going to be, then we should be seeing that kind of change as well. Whereas what we see in, like, most of the debates that go on now is this standstill, a lack of change. You know, like we're seeing with leaving the EU, there's been so much disruption in the time it's going to take us to leave because nobody's coming to a solid decision. So I think, yeah, it's actually reflected throughout the country. And I think I do agree with you. There does need to be some stronger leadership coming from somewhere to represent each party's beliefs.
Yeah, I think that's quite an interesting point. I think that a lot of the electorate have come kind of disillusioned with the political parties mainly, and I think that's reflected for a lot of the things that people have been living through quite recently, particularly like the Jewish community with the anti-Semitism which has been taking place in the Labour Party. Obviously that's been reflected in the results that we've seen today, and also as well with the Rindrush generation, they're going to be a lot less likely to vote for someone like the Conservatives because of the Conservatives' mishandling in the Home Office with all of their residency and citizenship status and that kind of thing. So I think because we've kind of got this mixed bag of results where no one has really done very well, essentially, both Labour and Conservatives, I think it's more of a kind of broad reflection that a lot of people are kind of struggling to come to the terms with the kind of political environment we're living in today.
I think that's quite a relevant point there. The nature of the political environment we're in at the moment is that actually, bar slight economic difference, kind of policy is very centralised. It's very similar. You know, Conservatives legalised gay marriage in 2013 when previously that was a Labour policy. And it's in much the same way we're seeing this, I think, a nervous Conservative change in how they behave. So we look at Amber Rudd's resignation, replaced by Saeed Javid, who is the first map, basically, person of ethnic origin to hold one of the great offices of state, which is pretty groundbreaking, to be honest. And I think we live in such an age of political turmoil, but it's quite likely that actually what it can be conducive to once we restabilize our politics is a great deal of change. And actually the points we've raised about community are quite important because, like I said, these elections do work on a community level and you start to feel the ground shake. So do you guys think that, you know, in recognition of where Labour might have lost out, there might be some development in how they deal with certain problems? So let's take anti-Semitism as an example. Losing Barnett, which they were, like, it's incredibly, incredibly close to completely sweeping. That is a very... it's not necessarily unprecedented. So my example is when I was back home for Easter break, I got a knock at the door, and they never... Campaigners never come to my front door. It's so rare that they do. And I came downstairs, and my dad was, like, heavily debating this person, this just a Labour campaigner, about anti-Semitism. And... that was kind of the point where I realised you don't really have that. You don't talk to people as much about how they feel about certain issues, but when it comes down to it, people know what they want politically. So my assumption would be that the Labour Party are now going to see that actually electorally this is going to begin to affect them, because actually Corbyn was planning to have his celebration parade in Barnet, but obviously they've lost a number of seats there. And I think it shows. I believe that will begin to impact, more or less how they start to behave on in a policy direction, and kind of just the crackdown. And we've seen comments from Ken Livingstone on his opinions on anti-Semitism. And I, likewise, in the same week, to give a bit of credit to Corbyn, there has been, a lot of movement. There's been expulsions of racists from the Labour Party, of anti-Semites from the Labour Party. And I think if we continue to move in a direction where both the Conservative and Labour Party start to crack down on a lack of minority representation or a lack of conscientiousness towards minorities, then we're not only making our, social policy bring a consensus to social policy in the same way that we have with abortion and gay marriage, but we can do that with how individual members of the party are treated as well.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think fundamentally Jeremy Corbyn didn't really address the anti-Semitism problem at first, but I think for the future, when he realises that this is why he's kind of lost a lot of the votes during the local elections, he is going to be more susceptible to thinking about these ideas and initiating policies like he is at the moment about kind of tackling this.
This is URN.